It is time for your KDNK local newscast for this Tuesday morning, September 13th. I'm Steve Cole, live in our Carbondale studios with News Director Gavin Dahl. Good morning, Gavin.
Good morning, Steve. Carbondale and Basalt trustees meet tonight in their respective town halls. Here in Carbondale, the meeting starts at 6, and the agenda is packed, including a review of the annual budget process, along with current revenue projections and year-to-date financials, plus interviews of trustee candidates to replace A.J. Hobbs continue. It's possible the board will vote on the replacement before the end of the meeting. Basalt starts early at 5 with work sessions on Habitat for Humanity's proposal for constructing housing on the school district's property south of the high school and a different land use application. Then their regular meeting agenda includes first readings of ordinances on zoning and marijuana licensing changes. A reminder that both meetings, Carbondale and Basalt, are streamed live on YouTube and easily accessible through grassrootstv.org for those of you who can't make it in person. The Colorado Oil and Gas Conservation Commission voted Monday to approve the second of two natural gas well pads within the Battlement Mesa planned unit development. The COGCC approved the first pad in July. Both well pads are owned by URSA Resources and are within 1,000 feet of residences. According to a press release from Western Colorado Congress, the COGCC approved the second pad despite state health department concerns about the location of a wastewater injection well in a residential area and next to the town's water intake from the Colorado River. In the final decision, the injection well was removed, but the supporting infrastructure was approved, leading local citizen groups to believe URSA may try to get the injection well approved later. Due to COGCC rules, residents cannot appeal the decision. Leslie Robinson, chair of the Grand Valley Citizens Alliance, a local group that has been fighting URSA's plans to drill within the PUD, has requested Governor John Hickenlooper intervene in the issue. The drilling and hydraulic fracturing is expected to take up to 3 years to complete. Colorado's first U.S. Senate debate of the election season was Saturday night in Grand Junction, hosted by Club 20, a group of Western Colorado counties. Benta Berkland talks to State House reporters about the debate and the Senate race.
Incumbent Democratic Senator Michael Bennett faced off against Republican Daryl Glenn and Libertarian candidate Lily Tong Williams in Grand Junction. Here's an excerpt between Senator Bennett and Glenn at the end of the debate, where Bennett asked Glenn about bipartisanship.
Over the course of this campaign, you said, quote, "I don't know any elected Democrats I get along with." You said, quote, "I'm running against Democrats, I'm running against evil." And you said you're, quote, "tired of hearing about Republicans reaching across the aisle." Your policies and views, like privatizing the VA and calling for, quote, "the elimination and defunding of all agencies, like the Department of Education and also EPA and energy, are far to the right of many Colorado Republicans. How exactly would you get anything done and live up to your own standards?"
His idea of reaching across the aisle is supporting the Iran nuclear deal. His idea of reaching across the aisle is having Republicans support the Affordable Care Act when we already know the devastating impact that's happening to people. His idea of reaching across the aisle is supporting EPA standards that are going to result in over 1,200 jobs that are being lost here.
I'm joined by Charles Ashby, a reporter with the Grand Junction Daily Sentinel, and Joey Bunch with the Denver Post. Joey, how would you characterize the debate and give us an overview about some of the things that were discussed?
They covered a lot of ground. They talked about Obamacare, the Iran nuclear deal, preserving Social Security, the Trans-Pacific Partnership. But really what we got was a lot of evasions and non-answers. You know, it's the first debate, so, you know, maybe they'll drill down a little tighter in the ones to follow.
I know a lot of people were looking for an answer on the Trans-Pacific Partnership, but neither Glenn nor Bennett seemed to have an answer on that.
Well, everybody on stage said that they supported free trade, but nobody had a good answer. I thought the one big gaffe of the night was Daryl Glenn said he hasn't read it, but it's online, and Michael Bennett pointed that out.
Charles, it's been a relatively quiet campaign for U.S. Senate.
Especially out here in the Western Slope. We don't get these guys coming out as often as we would like. This year has been a little weird in terms of Daryl Glenn. We've hardly seen him at all. In fact, this is only the second time I've known him to be out here, and the first time during the actual race with him against Bennett as the nominee. I've still yet to get on the mailing list for the press people for Daryl Glenn. They don't seem to have a campaign. If they do, it's one or two people. I know they have, he hasn't raised a lot of money, and I think that explains a lot why he's so down in the polls. What is it, about 11% he's down the last poll? People like to see the candidates. They want to see them face to face.
A much different approach than Donald Trump, where he takes full advantage of a lot of free media exposure.
It's unusual because one of the things that Glenn talked about in the debate was how many times he's been meeting with people seeking to portray Bennett as an out-of-touch Washington politician.
It's also unusual in that he has apparently blacklisted the biggest paper in the state, the Denver Post, because he didn't like some of the stories they have done.
Well, how about Bennett? How should he play this? Is it good for the incumbent just to try to lay low?
Well, that's what Hillary Clinton has done. You know, let the big dog eat. And so as less that Bennett can talk, the better it is for him, I think.
But Bennett's not like that. Bennett likes to get out. Bennett likes to get ahead of things. I mean, of course, he's been the senator for 6-7 years now, I guess, right? He's been out here a lot. He's been working on things like the Jordan Cove natural gas export facility out in Oregon that the Western Slope natural gas people want. So people do like him, and people do know that he does come out here. But he's, you know, taking the time to do so. And I know Glenn is new at this, but he seems to be not leaving El Paso County.
We'll have to see what happens in these final few weeks and if there are a few more debates so voters can get a sense of this race. Thanks. That was Charles Ashby with the Grand Junction Daily Sentinel, Joey Bunch with the Denver Post. I'm Benta Berkland in Grand Junction.
And Ben Tuberkland reports for the Rocky Mountain Community Radio Network, which KDNK is a proud member of. For KDNK News, I'm Gavin Dahl.
Colorado has been making steady progress for getting breakfast to more low-income students, Eric Galatis reports.
With summer vacation over and kids back in school, it's fitting that September is National Better Breakfast Month. In 2007, Colorado lawmakers passed legislation paving the way for free breakfasts for low-income students. Jeremy West with the Colorado School Nutrition Association says since then, the state has gone from serving 93,000 meals per day to nearly 175,000 per day.
Students can't learn when they're hungry, and so breakfast serves as that first stop in the day that we can get our students ready to learn in the classroom.
In 2010, Colorado was ranked 44th nationally in school breakfast participation among low-income students. Due to a series of initiatives, including an executive order by Governors Bill Ritter and later John Hickenlooper, West notes the state is now ranked 11th in the nation, up from 20th last year. The group Hunger Free Colorado has been a key advocate for many of the state's advances, including the Breakfast After the Bell Act passed in 2013. Kate Blackford with the group says the program has increased participation.
Starting breakfast later in the day and not requiring kids to arrive early, transportation was less of an issue. And by having it at that time, it was easier for everyone to participate together. And so you helped reduce the stigma of participating in school breakfast.
Blackford points to numerous studies that show breakfast helps boost kids' educational performance, improves attendance and behavior, and means fewer visits to the school nurse. West says schools across Colorado have embraced the challenge of getting that first meal to more kids.
We've also seen some great innovations around taking breakfast to students. A number of schools offer a grab-and-go breakfast from a kiosk or a cart. We do have a lot of schools, because of some legislation in Colorado, that provide breakfast in the classroom.
He adds that Colorado's success wouldn't be possible without funding from federal school nutrition programs. A new bill that would cut federal funding, H.R. 5003, has cleared committee and could be heard by the full U.S. House this session. This is Eric Galatis reporting for KDNK.